This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, and serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. And if you'd like to make an appointment with one of our 54 attorneys, call us at 703-218-2100. I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, which has on it all of these shows as well as prior shows. Over the last 4.5 years, I've been recording this radio show, and there's a lot of content there for you to listen to. There's also a lot of video and written articles of interest to you in the estate, tax, and business planning areas. So check out blueprintforwealth.org, and if you subscribe, you'll receive notifications of all recent blog posts. Finally, I invite you to read my article in the Washington Business Journal every month called Blueprint for Wealth, where I focus on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. Today, we're going to be focusing on the top 10 financial planning rules that everyone who owns stock options needs to know. Managing your stock options is one of the more complex financial challenges you'll ever face. In an initial effort to get the most out of your company's stock plan, let's focus on the following 10 rules. Rule number one is set your goals. When the company granted stock options to you, or restricted stock, whatever the case may be, your company gave you what it hopes is a powerful motivation and retention tool. It wants you to understand the option's value, and it wants you to fit the stock into your overall financial plans. All financial planning starts with setting goals. What do you want to do with the proceeds from the eventual sale of the stock? Do you want to pay for kitchen renovations in the next 2 years? How about your child's college education in the next 4 years? Or another child's wedding in the next 10 to 12 years? Or even retirement in the next 15 to 30 years? Reflecting on these goals will help you focus on your specific use of the stock options and stock in relation to your other income and savings. Rule number two, develop an overall plan. Determine how you're going to handle the stock options over time. You need to be aware of your choices, how long the options will last, what their term is, and the tax and lost consequences if you exercise the options at any given point in time. Now, in setting your goals and in developing an overall plan, you need to exercise and sell at least enough stock to meet your goals. In addition, you may want to stagger the exercises and subsequent sales over a period of years to spread out the tax consequences. Alternatively, some studies have shown that holding on to options for the full term may be the best way to maximize your gain. If you simply decide at the beginning or at the end of each year whether or not to exercise and sell during the year, you could generate unnecessary taxes or lose opportunities when the option price keeps rising. Plus, if you don't keep track of the expiration dates of your options, your in-the-money options, the options that have a value in excess of your exercise price, may expire unexercised. Rule number three, value your stock options accurately. Tax intricacies often will catch you by surprise. You may forget to discount the value of the stock option by the fact that you owe an exercise price or by the taxes generated on the exercise. An option to buy at $50 a share, 1,000 shares of your company's stock that may be trading currently at $100, might first appear to be the equivalent of a $100,000 investment, or 1,000 shares times $100 current price. But in the end, you may net only about $30,000, first after paying a $50 exercise price, and second after paying 40% or more in federal and state taxes on the exercise of the option. With the commonly granted non-qualified stock options, your company probably will have to withhold at least 25% of federal taxes plus payroll and state taxes when you exercise your options. Rule number four is wait as long as possible before you exercise those options. If the outlook for your company is good, don't immediately exercise the options. A traditional stock option will give you the right to buy stock up to 10 years into the future. Historically, stocks increase in value over time. By waiting, you can enjoy all the upside leverage potential without any cash investment. And the spread between your exercise price and the rising stock price grows without taxation, at least until you exercise it. Rule number five, when you should ignore rule number four, that is, waiting as long as possible to exercise. You should wait to exercise only if doing so meets your goals and your needs. If the stock options represent more than, say, 25% of your overall net worth, diversification may be more important than waiting. In addition, your company may have stock ownership guidelines or may just want to see you put more of your own money at real risk in company stock. That may require you to exercise and hold on to the shares. Finally, if your company's stock is volatile, meaning that the stock price is going up and down in a very short period of time, fairly rapidly and fairly significantly, making the price swings personally hard to tolerate, you may want to exercise and sell earlier rather than hold and exercise later. Of course, you can't sell company stock when you know important inside information. So all of these rules are subject to the insider trading rules, which say if you know something that the public doesn't know, then you cannot trade the stock with that knowledge. Check into whether your company has a blackout period or pre-clearance trading rules that impact the timing of any of your stock sales. Rule number six, learn what happens when you leave your company and tell your family members. Read the stock option plan that you were given when you received the option in the first place, and your grant agreement. Read them carefully. Know your rights if you're fired, or if you quit, or if you go to work for a competitor, or you retire, or what happens if you become disabled or even die. Many plans give you 90 to 180 days to exercise vested options after retirement or disability. The period could be shorter or longer. In addition, you may lose vested stock option gains immediately if you go to work for a direct competitor. Make sure you, as well as your family or close friends, are aware of these rights, and clearly your estate planning lawyer should be aware of this as well. It's really a shame when valuable stock options lapse without ever being exercised. Rule number seven, if you have an incentive stock option, which is a statutory stock option, you'd better be aware of the alternative minimum tax. So before you decide to exercise and hold on to stock, double check whether you have incentive stock options, ISOs, or non-qualified options. With a non-qualified option, when you exercise, you will owe tax at your ordinary income rate on the spread between the option exercise price and the market price, whether or not you sell the stock immediately. But with an ISO, when you intend to hold onto the stock for at least 1 year so you can qualify for long-term capital gains treatment, you may face the AMT tax trap. The biggest mistake you can make with an ISO is to forget or not know about the alternative minimum tax. The AMT rules require you to take the spread between the fair market value and the exercise price on the date you exercise it in calculating your alternative minimum taxable income, unless you sell the shares in the calendar year that you exercise the options. This messy AMT calculation adds back to your income a bunch of standard deductions and other items and subjects the gain at tax rates of up to 28%. If the tax on this amount is higher than the standard regular tax, you have to pay the higher amount, so you'd better be aware of the alternative minimum tax. Rule number 8, determine your tax rates and watch your tax brackets. Most stock options generate ordinary taxable income when they're exercised, either because they're non-qualified stock options or you exercise an ISO and sell it soon after you exercise it, not satisfying the long-term capital gains holding period. Determine your tax rate so you can plan for any estimated tax payments and analyze whether you want to take all income in 1 year or spread it out over several years. For example, under the current tax rates, near the end of the year, your taxable income might be, say, $121,000. And let's say you have potential stock option gains of another $100,000. You're currently in the 28% tax bracket, but by exercising that stock option, it may put you into a higher tax bracket, the 33% or even the 35% bracket. Rule number 9, focus on your vesting rules and dividends. Some companies now grant options that are immediately exercisable, but have resale restrictions that lapse over time. Or if your company pays a stock dividend, you may be better off exercising now and holding the stock to get the dividend. Rule number 10, choose an advisor who understands stock options. Make sure that they work with them frequently and give you references to clients who they help with their stock option issues. If you've got questions on your stock options, call us at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Many family businesses struggle with the question of transferring ownership or control of the business to their kids. The SBA estimates that only a third of all businesses are successfully transferred from one family member to the next. But small businesses make up almost 90% of all business in the U.S., and they pay a large portion of American wages. Family businesses face at least 4 hurdles to successful transfer of control: lack of planning, unwillingness on the part of the owner to transfer control, unwillingness on the kids to manage the business, and dwindling prospects for the business. Unless these hurdles can be overcome, the odds against a successful transfer of control within the family are great. Through careful succession planning, a business owner can successfully transfer their business to the next generation. Contact the experienced business attorneys at Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman to assist business owners in desiring to transfer their businesses to the next generation.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today are 2 guests. One, my partner, John Dedon, who comes on once a month, who brings his special guests. Welcome, John.
Hi, Wayne.
John is an estate planner extraordinaire and represents lots of wealthy families all across the D.C. metro area and across the country. And our other special guest today is Wendy Payne. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Wendy is a wealth management advisor and a financial planner, but she manages her own growing client base in addition to being affiliated with the financial management firm of Lara, Shull, and May. She has her own growing client base, and the company is known as Life Stage Transitions, and we're going to talk about that today. She specializes in working with widows, divorcees, and other women who suddenly find themselves responsible for financial decisions for the first time in their lives.
She's developed a thorough process, which I hope to explore today, that guides individuals through their individual life stage transitions. She provides holistic, customized wealth management solutions to her clients. And her passion, which I know you'll hear when she speaks, is to help her clients gain financial empowerment through the insight and education that she offers. Her clients find her empathy and personal care both comforting and valuable. Welcome to the show, John. Take over this interview and let's find out about the empathy and personal processes that Wendy brings to her clients.
Thanks, Wayne. We'll explore that together. Wendy, life stage transitions, when did you create your company?
We officially launched this past August, although the process itself has been evolving well over a decade.
And I want to come back and talk about that, but first, let's go back several years. How did you get into this financial planning business?
Well, my background has been in business administration, and I joined a financial planning firm, and that was really my first introduction to investment management, financial planning, etc. And I stepped outside of the business administration scope, and I just thirsted for more and more knowledge, and I fell in love with financial planning.
And that process started how long ago?
About 13 years ago.
13 years. So you're now a veteran of the financial business. And as Wayne got into when we went through your introduction, you've begun to carve out a niche for yourself within the financial planning area.
Yes, I have.
And that's done now through your company. Tell us a little bit about that.
What happens is that people have needs that are outside of the scope of financial planning. It's outside of the scope of managing investments or selecting how to position their money. And those, a lot of that really has to do with knowledge and education. I work with specifically widows and divorcees, other newly independent women, so that they have the knowledge and the experience and the skills so that they can continue on in an independent fashion.
So what we've learned is the focus of your business is really the divorcees, the widows, perhaps the women who have not been hands-on in the financial area and need help.
Yes, and also those who have not necessarily been completely absent from their family's financial planning, but those who have not been fully involved with.
So I assume that as you were acting as a planner along the way, you saw that there was a real need to provide this kind of service.
Yes.
I mean, how many times did people come to you? I've had this happen, you know, with a lot of our clients, that the husband all of a sudden passes away. The wife has been sort of relying on the husband to handle all their financial stuff over the years. And she turns to you and she says, well, Wendy, what do I do now? What's the first step? And what's your answer? I mean, I guess you developed a whole bunch of answers over the years. And is that how your process evolved?
It's not a matter of providing answers to my clients. It's a matter of providing various solutions. And if they are educated about the different solutions available to them, it then becomes their answer.
So much of what you do is to educate.
Yes.
And what are the types of areas that you've found the clients need help with? We talked about financial planning, but I know that you're not simply there to invest assets. It's much broader than that.
It is. I'll just give you a couple of situations. I am working with a widow who, she's quite young. She's in her 40s. Hmm. She has never written a check. It was just a year ago today she wrote her first check. She's had to learn how to balance a checkbook. And
wow.
And she quickly grasped the concept of paying her bills on time. But did she understand her invoice? Was it correct? Was it accurate? Just basic things that a lot of us take for granted. A lot of people, there's a deficiency. They don't know how to do it.
So that's really at a fundamental level of basic day-to-day living. I know Wayne and I, in our practice as state attorneys, see a lot of widows who need help just in dealing with their husband's estate.
Yes.
So that's one issue, the estate administration. A second can be then figuring out their own estate, the widow's estate, and funding a revocable trust. So it's the general estate issues that go into play.
It does. Also tax planning, because I find quite often after a husband passes, now the wife becomes engaged with the accountant or the person who's preparing the income taxes. She takes a huge satchel or large shoebox filled with all kinds of paperwork, and here you are, Mr. or Mrs. Accountant, and now the meter's running. They're spending a lot of time sifting through a lot of information, and it could have been done in a much more efficient way, both saving time and money.
Do you help them set up their processes so that they can more easily approach their professionals?
Yes. We have, again, it's through education.
Sure.
We have an organizational process. How do they keep track of their important documents? How can they identify what's important? I can promise you, you do not need to keep a prospectus from 1987, okay? You would be surprised at people don't throw things away, and they're afraid to because they might need it someday. So identifying what to keep, what to throw away is a large battle also.
So it really seems you can play an important role, not in working in lieu of an advisor, but really complementing the advisors, because there could be a gap there as to how the widow or divorcee is able to act.
Yes. A lot of us have different advisors. We have our attorney, our accountant, our financial planner, investment advisor, insurance agent, etc. I want to bring them together. So now you don't have multiple advisors, but you have one advisory team. And if we have communication between everyone, it's much more efficient. And this way, I've now educated the client in presenting the topics that may come about. She can now communicate with her attorneys and her accountants and such, her professionals, on a more understandable level.
So you can play several roles. One of them is simply being the orchestra leader who's able to tie in the different advisors.
Yes, the orchestra leader, the teacher, the
quarterback.
Yes, exactly.
That's my latest. Yes. Since the Redskins actually won a game, I can use quarterback as my reference point. But it's important to have a team that works together. And not everybody does the same thing. Everybody may be doing different things. And so you'll serve as the quarterback for your clients?
Yes. And that's what gives me the most pleasure. There are a lot of investment advisors out there. You know, we can pick. There's a lot of good quality investments out there. I want to do something above and beyond and more meaningful than that. And that's why I created this process.
What is it about the business that you created that is so satisfying for you?
Well, it touches home with me personally. I've had a couple of family experiences. I have my Aunt Alice is quite young. She was widowed all of a sudden at age 39.
Wow.
They have two children. They did their planning. They had wills. They had trusts. They put money aside. They had life insurance. And she felt a little bit of comfort in that after he passed. But then it wasn't too long after that that the horrible truth was that it wasn't enough. And she has worked day and night. She worked more than any person I know. And if I could talk to my Uncle Kurt today, I know he would say this is not the life he envisioned for her. That's not what they planned for. They planned to avoid this. And it's through, if they had the education, if my program existed back then, this could have been avoided. And this is really what inspired the creation of this. And then I later lost my mother to cancer. And when we got the diagnosis, it was an opportunity really to go through the process. And Mom said, hey, I'm going to be your client. You need to help me prepare for my departure. You need to be the advisor, and I'm going to be your client. And then she said, now I want you to put on a different hat. You're now your own client because your mother is dying. You now are charged with all of the tasks. You have to do this. And this is how you're going to be able to relate to your clients. You will have the empathy, and you will get it. And she was right.
Well, I know in working with you and seeing the passion and the care that you have for your clients that this is very meaningful to you. It's more certainly than just a job, the way you approach it.
It is. I'm a mother, and mothers want to protect, and they want to help others. And that's what I want to do. I want to help others, protect my community, and I care about people. And that makes me feel very satisfied in what I do here on this earth.
We're talking with Wendy Payne, who has a company that she calls Life Stage Transitions. You know, it's interesting. It's not just divorcees and widows or widowers that you're dealing with. It's really people that may not have the experience in dealing with financial matters while they're married, and or single individuals who may be young. Teaching them how to manage their financial affairs. I think you can really expand this to really adapt to the name of your company, Life Stage Transitions, because you know, when you're very young, you're 18, you're coming out of college, you have credit cards, you have a checkbook, you know, do you know how to reconcile your bank account? Things like that that you may not have gotten while you were an undergrad at whatever school you went to.
That's right. And I have two specific processes at this point. One is specific to the widows, the divorcees, the newly independent women that we've been talking about. But I also have a process for couples. Whether you're married, you're in a committed relationship, this is sort of like the fire drill. Okay, there's a fire drill. We all practice. We get up, we go outside, and we go to the meeting place. You need to have a fire drill and make sure that if the other one is not there, and we don't know who's going first, and are both of you able to live independently and act independently in a successful manner if and when the time comes that you are the one left behind? And I have a process that helps couples get to that point.
Excellent. That was really what I was getting at. And it's good to know that you have that process that you can offer both to the couples as well as to the individuals.
Besides the clients that you work with on a one-on-one basis, how are you educating the community in general about the process?
I offer some classes. I'm a volunteer instructor through the Fairfax County Adult Community Education, and I also volunteer through Loudoun County Adult Education. I have classes for both newly independent widows and widowers. I don't want to leave the men out.
Sure.
And I also have a class for the couples. The next classes are coming up in the spring, I believe March and April. The dates have not been listed on the website. You can reach out to those organizations. I will also have them listed on my website, which is www.lifestagetransitions.com, when those are made available.
Well, it's obvious you have not just a passion for the work you do, but also an expertise. I'm looking at a book, Wendy, that I see that was recently published, The Retirement Success Solution, and you have a chapter in there devoted to women and retirement planning.
I do.
Why don't you tell us about some of the subjects that you covered in the chapter?
Well, some of what we talk about is the fact that women tend to take more time out of the workforce. They're raising their own children. They are perhaps in the sandwich generation where they're taking care of their own children and they're either aging or ill parents. And they take time out of the workforce for that. So that means they're not making a salary. They're not contributing to Social Security. They're also not contributing to their 401k or employer-sponsored plan. And so that means that they have less contributed, but yet, statistically, women live longer than men. If I look at the age group of the 65 and older population, for every 4 widowed women, there's 1 widowed man. And that's as of a 2008 statistic. That's a lot of independent women. So we have less saved for retirement. We are outliving the husbands statistically, and we have less paid into our retirement. And because we are the caregivers, I know with me, if I have a dollar, I'm giving it to my children, whether it's through something they want at the store, something that we do together as a family, or I'm funding their colleges. If and I'm not downplaying college funding here, but with college, you can pay for college through tuition, loans, grants. There's no such thing as a retirement loan. There's no such thing as a retirement grant.
So not only are you focused on women who may be divorced or widowed, you're also focused on women who are just being good moms, and at some point they need to begin to take care of their own retirement.
They do. They need to plan for retirement first, and then whatever's left over, pass on to the children.
We've been talking with Wendy Payne, who is the owner and operator of a company called Life Stage Transitions. Wendy, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can go to my website. Again, that's www.lifestagetransitions.com. For the audience that are not computer literate, they can always reach me by telephone, which is area code 703-431-7305. You can also reach me through the Northern Virginia Alliance of Professionals Helping Seniors.
Thank you for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
John Dedon, thanks for being another interviewer on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you, Wayne.
And join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 a.m. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a
a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.